And then you end up in the middle. Thy watchman shall see eye to eye. We believe that this time is now here, but only to the extent that we are aware of the responsibilities of watchmen and the accuracy of their vision. Where there is no vision, the people perish. Write the vision on tables for everyone to read it. But that's a live vision. That's not a chart. A chart is merely a means of conveying things that have happened, are happening, and will happen. So you can read a chart and not be identified with the events that it is picturing. So Habakkuk, we have a special thesis on Habakkuk, it just happens to fit into the general thinking of the brethren, is the one that says, write the vision. That's quoted from Habakkuk. Though it tarry, seemingly so, wait upon it. It will not really tarry. It will surely come. Our problem as Bible students is the tarrying. And so it was after 1914, the first eruptive reaction began to emerge. Brother Russell was even still here. But between 1914 and 1916, he was permitted to readjust his thinking, make the necessary correction and revisions on the reason for the premature conclusions with respect to 1914, and put things in order. And so there was no real damage done. So far as the message was concerned, there might have been some reactions because of the disappointments of the brethren, but this was a part of divine permission for a purpose of testing the brethren as to whether they were dedicated and consecrated to a time feature or to the Lord. Well, you say, well, that was in 1914. This is 1988. Are you consecrated to a time feature? Quotes, question mark. Is it something that's in the future that you are committed to? It just should happen because you're committed to it. And if the brethren don't see it, do you really feel sorry for them, or are you praying about the matter from your own point of view? But in either case, you're on that borderline of being committed to a time feature. That's why we tell the brethren time is no more. There's nothing in the future that you need to be committed to on a time basis, because there's no more times on the charts. You can make up your own times, but then you're in danger because the Lord isn't behind that. He's not giving us any more times. In the days of the sounding of the voice of the seventh angel, the mystery of God should be finished. He gave us all that we need to know about dates, but the time features he had to leave for the Lord to work out. And that's where you should be guided as far as the future is concerned, unless you have a special clarity of vision. Now, our clarity of vision with respect to the future is that the kingdom is bound to be established because the Lord is present. But now let me come back to Isaiah 52:7. How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publishes peace, that publishes salvation. That's good. You love that part. You all want to get into your witnessing activities. But how about the rest of it? That saith unto Zion, thy God reigneth. You can do a lot of witnessing and not necessarily be indoctrinated on that particular feature. But that's where it ends. That saith unto Zion, thy God reigneth. And if that is a truth, quote, a truth, not a conception, not an idea, but a truth, the results of the reaction and the impact that that should have upon our unified thinking is unlimited. Because it should so organize our relationships that we are in perfect harmony on that matter and the related matters. And so then it says, thy watchmen shall lift up the voice. You can't do that unless you're certain of what you believe. With the voice together shall they sing. How is your singing? Sounds good. Here. I'll settle for that. But that isn't the type of singing that it's referring to. It's the voice of the message that's the singing. We should all be on the same orchestration. We should all be, oh, there may be intonations, variations of notes, high points, different chords, all part of the same music. But this music should be in harmony with the music on the other side of the veil. Because there's where the majority of the body members are. And it's the 144,000 that are doing this singing. Where are we? If we're not singing the same song. No problem up there. I'll assure you of that. But this is reflected in the music and in the orchestration. But the reason they can sing together is because they shall see eye to eye when the Lord returneth to Zion. Now, here's a point of reference in terms of the possibilities here now. Break forth into joy. Sing, ye waste places. Sing together, ye waste places, of Jerusalem. Have you caught that note? Have you seen what's happening in Jerusalem? Have you heard about it, that Israel is a state? Have you heard that it happened on time, 1948? Israel is the state. Are you aware that this is 1988? 4888? And what about the waste places of Jerusalem? Certainly it would make us sing if we know anything about it, because Brother Russell spoke about that, and he spoke to 10,000 Jews at a time in the Hippodrome in New York, and we have brethren in our ecclesia who were there at that time and heard him. So that's a live thing. Not past tense, as long as brethren are alive that know about it. And they considered him one of their best benefactors. So he would rejoice if he saw it. But you have to do the rejoicing for him if you see it. So it says, ye break forth into joy, sing together, ye waste places of Jerusalem. Well, they're not going to do it. We have to do it. I'm glad that many brethren have made it a special point of effort to go to the visit Jerusalem. And people from all climes and backgrounds are visiting Jerusalem because they sense that something is going on there, and it's because the Lord is making his name known. For the Lord has comforted his people. He has redeemed Jerusalem. Why aren't you singing about it? The Lord has made bare his holy arm in the eyes of all nations. This is a universal picture. But it's not yet on that magnitude. And all the ends of the earth shall see the salvation of our God. So therefore, with that in view, you don't need any more dates to follow those type of signs. The Lord is making them for you. So this is the time when thy watchmen should begin to see eye to eye because of these graphic, demonstrable signs of which Jerusalem is the key. Jesus said, when you see the fig tree blossoming, then you know that the kingdom is nigh. He didn't say when you read about it, take a good interest in what's happening. He says there's a personal relationship to the one thing and the other. Your redemption draweth nigh. Well, why aren't we all redemption-minded? Oh, you're kingdom-minded. But that's not the point. You may never get there. You may believe it. You may never get there. Well, redemption is something that you have to go through to get it. So he says, your redemption is what draweth nigh. So on signs, beloved, we may begin to see eye to eye. On doctrinal matters, it's a moot question. I don't know if we're ever going to get all the minds of the brethren to become reconciled to their differences of insights and concepts about some of the writings pertaining to the truth, including Brother Russell's. That's part of the test. You may not realize it, but the Lord is overruling all of this. That's the thunder and lightning that you hear. All this month, that's all I've heard about. This is what famine conditions produce. Every satellite reflection of the weather is thunder, lightning, and rain in some cases. Not enough all the time to change the picture. But you can hear it. It rolls. It crackles. It bursts forth. The lightning you won't hear, but you may see it in a flash. In one of the cases of our own ecclesia, it struck their home, shut off the phone, damaged all of their electrical apparatus, and they were lucky that they weren't hurt. The Lord permitted this for our benefit, to awake, because many of the brethren know this sister and her family. Should I tell them the name? Judy Souter, is that it? You've heard the name, Sister Judy Souter. Sure, many of you have. So she's a living example of God's providences for us to consider what the Lord is saying to all of us. Pay attention. Thunder and lightning and hail. Came down in golf ball size, then the next thing we heard was in tennis ball size, and we've heard him. Nebraska knows about hail. Where the line goes. Where's he? Where's the Lango? He's here somewhere, I'm sure. Oh, I was looking there. Thank you. You're from Nebraska, brother. Have you had hail out there? Oh, yeah. That's for our benefit. It's going to take hard, concentrated truths to knock some sense into the world. And it may take some hard, concentrated truths to shake up some of the breath. Now, when we see those things, we see eye to eye. We know when the thunder strikes, when the thunder booms, and when the lightning flashes, and when the hail comes down, because we have evidences and damages. They've had damages in that area. Some of the brethren there have told me about it. That's farm area, too. And it'll break windows, it'll come in through the roofs. So we're talking realities. These are our brethren we're talking to. This is not just the world, otherworldly events that we're related to. So, on these matters, the Lord is giving us an opportunity to see eye to eye. These things we have to see, and we'll see them alike. So this is the time for it to begin to happen, beginning with this convention. I say that because you can begin any time you want. But this is a good place to start, because this is a 1988 convention. And I have on my notes here, banner year. We had anticipated that 88 would be an outstanding year. And it turned out to be that from more points of view than one. Stock market went down, crashed, brought them back memories from 1929. We knew something about that. Banks closing, people jumping out of windows, losing all that they had. Thousands of dollars, millions of dollars at one swoop. I said to the brother who was serving us at that particular time, because he had brought the message with him, because he knew about these financial techniques. But after he gave it with proper emphasis, I reinforced him. I says, the world, this nation will never be the same. I might have said the world will never be the same, because we are so interrelated that what happens in one area is going to affect the other. So I might have said the world will never be the same. But that's the potential impact of the financial arrangements when any part of the
that particular
arrangement is shaken. It was an earthquake. That's what earthquakes are about. It describes, the word earthquake describes every form of calamity that is happening, and the people use it that way. When a building collapses and falls, the people say, it felt like an earthquake. We heard a roar, and everything collapsed. That's what earthquake is telling the world. It's telling you, that's the last plague. It was a tremendous earthquake. The cities of the nations fell. The mountains and islands were moved out of their places. Earthquake territory. All right, we got to see an eye to eye so we can progress. We trust. Jesus gives us the answers in a special way, so we're starting with that. In Matthew, the 24th chapter, which is a famous chapter, and I'm sure we're all getting engrossed into it. I understand that Brother David Duran is going to start them getting into Revelation. Is that right? Did I hear right? See, the time has come. Revelation! Getting to see what's going on. John said, I was in the Spirit on that day. That's the revelation of God. And the Lord was telling us, first of all, that the time is at hand. Did you understand that? You got the volume that said it, but you say, well, that was some years ago. I beg your pardon. It was, because it had a start somewhere. But it's more so now than it was when it was written. The time is at hand. And to teach us things shortly to come to pass. Now, don't get the idea that shortly is in one lifetime. You lose your perspective. Shortly is in a generation. And this generation shall not pass away till all these things be fulfilled. What generation is that? This is the generation of them that serve the Lord. So from 1878, the church is one generation in terms of those that are left. And before they pass away, this is the generation, the righteous generation that served the Lord, every one of these prophecies will be fulfilled. All right, the subject matter of the 24th chapter. And they, as 24:3, and as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, this was a serious question. It wasn't something to get involved with a lot of extraneous company. They came unto him privately, saying, tell us, when shall these things be? And what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world? Now, there's two separate things there. What shall be the sign of thy presence? I just told you that was the big issue now. But that isn't the only issue. The other one was the end of the world. That's where you are now. So the presence is no longer relevant to what they were asking, because you've been in the presence now over 100 years. If you don't believe it now, forget it. But the end of the world, you better be prepared for. That's the difference. Now, watch how he answers. Jesus answered and said, take heed that no man deceive you. For many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. So you've got to watch that. Watch false prophecies. Watch speculations. Watch wrong doctrines. Watch the misguided concepts of truth, ideas. That's going to be the test. Those are the winds and false doctrines that have already been loose. They were loose way back in the days of Brother Russell after 1916. First thing that came out, White Tower. No character development. How many of you, any here, remember that? You go back that far? That was the first thing that began to put the burden on others. No more character. They haven't had any character since then. So that's when things began to happen. Then they got into the other extreme. You don't need the ransom because Adam isn't coming back. Winds of false doctrine. Don't let anybody deceive you along these lines. I'm just telling you, this is reality from a way back. It's worse ever since. You had people that closed the door. 2 or 3 times, 4 or 5 times, 6 or 7 times. Don't know how many times you need to close it. One should be enough. But they're still closing it. False doctrine. So that's what he says, take heed that no man deceive you, because this would be an ongoing test amongst the brethren. But now we come into the substance. For nation shall rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There shall be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes. Now, you haven't heard anything about earthquakes, have you? If you have, you have. If you haven't, you haven't met me. Now, this is Jesus' package now. Famines, earthquakes, and pestilences in diverse places. But he wasn't talking about today. So you say, what is that? What makes so much important? What makes that so much important? That's nothing new. What's new? I'll get you to the new stuff in a minute. He says this, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. So then he gives us a little more now. Nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. And then they shall deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall put you, kill you, and you shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. Then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another. Better watch that. Is there any hatred amongst the brethren? Well, he's warning about this. That's almost like a threatening question, isn't it? You say, how dare you put such a thing in our realm? Well, this, I'm not doing it. Jesus said that this was going to happen. And it happened in his day. But if you want to mollify the word hate, it comes out in different ways. We have a tendency to be disaffected towards one another. For different reasons. You don't see like I see, so I'm not particularly interested in your company. I think we should be more interested, at least on a conversational basis, if we think we can be helpful to one another. But anyhow, it ends up in the same results that hatred would end up with. We don't care to see one another if you don't agree with me. But that isn't the way the Lord meant it to be. We're supposed to be one body. And he didn't say that we all would see eye to eye, but we'll give you that later on because you have that in your theme context. We went over that, so we'll come back with that. Now, these are the beginning of sorrows. Now, when do we get to the reality here? Now, then we're going to have to transfer the same package, and then we'll get to this notation that we gave you. He says, when ye see, now learn a parable of the fig tree. When his branch is yet tender and putteth forth his leaves, ye know that summer is nigh. So likewise, when ye shall see these things, know that it is near, even at the door. Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all these things be fulfilled. That's why the church didn't go in 1914. These things hadn't all been fulfilled. The Lord knew that. It's written. So there had to be some of the church still here when Israel became a nation. There has to be some of the church still here when Zechariah says, and that's the last word on the prophecy pertaining to the Jews, Israel shall become a cup of trembling and a stone of stumbling to all those who handle her. And the next thing will be, and they shall be, anyone who picks it up shall be hurt by it. And then will be the reaction of jealousy when all the nation will be gathered against it, but they shall not prevail. That's the last word on Israel. That's where we are now. So you see, you're a testimony to what Jesus said. This generation can't go before they see these things. So I hope we've made that clear. Now, this that you have, how many of you have these? See how many are missing. All right, I think that's pretty good coverage. We're bringing this to your attention because we want you to have something concise and compact that you can take and think up and look up, because this is strictly Brother Russell. Well, we talk a lot about Brother Russell without fully appreciating the depth of his genius as pertains to expounding truth, because in the area of signs of the times, Brother Russell was first and foremost. In every watchtower, there was news and views. And those watchtowers came out, what is it called? Semi-monthly, is that right? Or bi-monthly, which is it? Semi. Twice a month. Thank you. So you've got all the updating information on what was happening because he knew that those were going to be the signs when the church would know how close they were to the end. And this is one of them. I read it. The time of trouble. The prophet, I'll give you the reference in case some want to follow it by what we're saying on tape. Excerpts from reprint volume 6, page 5112. Article entitled, Come let us return. Then a time of trouble. The prophet proceeds to indicate that shortage of crops. You hadn't thought about that till now. And I think you represent a sufficient congregation of states that no one is exempt from having been influenced and impacted by this recent magnitude of disaster. The prophet proceeds to indicate that shortage of crops will have much to do with the trouble. I never heard anybody talk about it before. You thought I was talking when I said about earthquake. Well, now you got it real straight from the Russell. That was just the overall picture. All the other things fit in as a supplement. Drought and famine in one part may be relieved by the surplus of another part. Nevertheless, we are to remember that the entire situation is in the divine hand. Now, you're studying that. Now, that doesn't mean that you take a casual, disinterested point of view. Well, the Lord knows what he's doing. The world is time for their judgment, and they've got to go through these things. Oh, no. This is part of your responsibility to know it, to feel it, and to understand the motivation behind it, because this is Elijah's work. Let me finish reading before I get involved with Elijah. We are to remember that the entire situation is in the divine hand, and that if a shortage of food supply should now come to pass, now, it would indicate a divine intention in the matter. And this is italicized for those of you who have the article. Yeah, not the article, we did this. More than at any time in the world's history. You see why I say this is a banner year? We haven't had all so many signs converge as we have at this time. Anything that you want to bring up as an illustration of calamity has already happened. The sea and the earth has been hurt. The trees have been cut down. Virgil, I'm not getting to that. That's a simple subject, but you can see that obviously. It was our privilege when we were out to our meeting place in the suburb town in Clinton that they have a big tree in front of the house. It goes back 2-3 generations. And I hadn't noticed it because I don't have a trained farmer's eye, but the sister told us that tree is dying. And she said it with her heart. And then we looked out and she said, see the limbs? They're drying up, leaves. I said, what's going to happen? It'll die. Now, this is across the board. That's only from an illustration. What's forest fire doing to your trees? Yellowstone Park is on fire now. California has it ever since. We sent out notices about 2-3 months ago. About 2,000 strikes of lightning started fires in about 13 states. We didn't send it out for nothing. You've got a replay of that same thing. So what's happening to your trees? Now it's going to be a problem of environment, because the ground will not be suitable for any type of production. That's the literal. The spiritual is equally applicable, but we won't take time for that. So hurt not, the earth and the sea and the are being hurt. Now then, what we're saying here, according to this, Brother Russell says, this is part of the divine arrangement, but it's not for the world alone, it's for us. And why? All right, now we're going to get into our subject. Not that we haven't been on it, but we haven't pinpointed it. Malachi, behold, I will send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me. And the Lord whom ye seek shall suddenly come to his temple. And we stop there. What's going to happen when the Lord suddenly comes to his temple? Well, of course, everything is going to be rosy and pleasant and happy. The Lord is coming to his temple. The temple is going to be glad to see him. Everybody's going to have a happy time. Oh, no. That's not in Malachi. The Lord shall come to his temple, and the messenger of the covenant whom you delight in, he shall come, saith the Lord of hosts. So you would say, well, if you delight in him, what's the problem? The problem is, but who may abide the day of his coming, which should be presence? And who shall stand when he appeareth, which is now? For he is like a refiner's fire and fuller's soap. He shall sit as a refiner and purifier of silver, He shall purify the sons of Levi and purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Lord an offering in righteousness. What kind of offering have you got? The only reason I read that part was because we got into an interesting comment about offerings, abounding in works. There has to be offering in order for it to be acceptable, in order for it to be valid, has to be accepted by the Lord. That's what he tells you here, that they may offer an acceptable offering. Now then, if there's some reason why the offering is defective, if there's an ingredient lacking in the motivation that doesn't make it acceptable to the Lord by his standards, if you got something against your brother, you know, he says, leave your offering on the altar. We have never taken that literally. We figure, well, who is my brother? I didn't do him any real harm. If he misunderstood me, that's his fault. Yeah. The Lord says, go make right with your brother before you come with your offering. Leave your sacrifice on the altar. So therefore, the picture here is that they may offer unto the Lord an offering in righteousness, and that's the only offering that's accepted as part of the sin offering. The great company's offering is not sin offering. It's the goat in the wilderness whose blood is applied for the rectification of justice on a different level. The Lord's offering, the sin offering, is for the ransom and the purification of the world. The ransom is Jesus, and the sin offering is the means by which it is made effective to the world. And only the only ones who have part in the sin offering are those whose sacrifice is accepted by the Lord. So you see, that's the purification of the sons of Levi is mentioned because all of them are in that tribe, spiritually speaking, but not everyone's offering is the one that applies to the sin offering. All right, so now we see that there's going to be testing, sifting, fire, and trials when the Lord comes to his temple. It was so in Brother Russell's day, but it wasn't so manifest as it is today and after he left the scene. It's more so now. Every man's work shall be tried. How are you building? Gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, or stubble? Because every man's work shall be made manifest, because it shall be tried by fire. Don't worry about the winds. You ain't going to get up any better in the fire. What do you think? Because the work shall be destroyed. And Jesus said, watch the winds of false doctrine. Don't let three or four times he reiterates, because deception will be the hallmark of the day. All right, now we'll go back. This is Elijah I'm talking about. He will say he will send his messenger before that day to prepare for the way of the Lord. Where are we in that? Are we preparing for the way of the Lord? How do you do that? By making announcements of his presence and later of his reign, because it's the reign part that gives more trouble to the ones who haven't clearly accepted the basic doctrine concerning the presence. Now then, in the fourth chapter, he goes on to say, behold, I send you Elijah, the prophet, before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. And he shall turn the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the hearts of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. That's why there is not only a contingency upon your being identified with Elijah, but a irrevocable responsibility as to whether you're performing Elijah's mission. Because if it fails for one reason or another, the earth is going to be smitten with a curse. Now, it's not going to fail in its ultimate mission of restoring the world into their harmonious relationship between the fathers and the children, but it may fail in overturning, it may fail in converting, I should say. The overturn is inevitable as far as Babylon and its cohorts are concerned. But there may be no fruit on the vine. Let me give you Habakkuk, because that's where we are. I can find it. Lucky. Let's see, what verse is it here? First of all, he told us he will stand upon his watch and set me upon the tower, and I will watch to see what he will say unto me and what I shall answer unto him. Now, that's crucial so far as thy watchman seeing eye to eye is concerned. We have to have a communication with the Lord ongoing. You can't sit comfortably on your laurels because you've read the volumes, you know the reprints, and you think you're in harmony with the Lord. You can't sit comfortably and be a watchman. A watchman is constantly on the qui vive. He doesn't even have sleep regularly. I didn't even sleep the other night. Trying to get things together. That's the watchman's responsibility. But I'm looking now for fruit on the vine. Where is it? Somebody tell me. Should have found it here. I didn't have this in my... No. Habakkuk, 3:17. That's right. I have it, Mark, and I can't see good. Although the fig tree shall not blossom. There's your key right there. I told you the fig tree is the key sign. If you don't see it, you won't see this. But we said that when you see the fig tree blossoming. Yeah. But that was 40 years. Had it. But there would come a time, Habakkuk is saying, when there would be strenuous impingements upon the financial prosperity of Israel. They're going through that now. I have a reference here, but I don't know if I'll find it that quickly. Because Israel is the key. Israeli military coffers running dry in West Bank. Services cut. And you ought to know how much military expenses can drain your budgets. That's our problem here. The fig tree shall not blossom at a certain time. Neither shall there be fruit on the vines, not productive, even amongst the Bible students. My father is the husbandman, I am the vine, and ye are the branches. I expect every branch to bring forth fruit. That's our problem. And if it does bring forth fruit, I'm not satisfied with that. I prune every branch that it may bring forth more fruit. If I didn't see your smiling faces, I'd say I wouldn't bring it up. But it seems to me that there's been more fruitage in you since last year. That's a good sign. Because if you were just same, I wouldn't say that was too bad, but that isn't enough to satisfy the husband. He said, I want more fruit. So I'm sure you've had some trials, testings, and tribulations since last year because I see more fruitage here now today. Everybody here has been in harmony with the spirit of the body membership, getting together, talking, fellowshipping, discussing, helping one another. That's fruitage. So, but the problem on the overall basis is that neither shall fruit be on the vines. The labor of the olive shall fail. That's the Holy Spirit. There isn't enough Holy Spirit pervading the Bible student congregation. Oh, they were virgins. They came out to meet the bridegroom. But when the time for testing came, the foolish didn't have oil in their vessels. Oh, they had lamps. Everybody knows about Brother Russell. They can tell you, are you reading the volumes? They'll all ask you, what are you studying? That's not to say that you have oil. That means that you got lamps. But the foolish person didn't have oil in their lamps. They weren't perceiving the signs of the time. They didn't know what time it was. And when they found out, it was too late because they had to go to the marketplace to get oil. And oil is getting very expensive. It's going to take you some more time. So the labor of the olive was failing. The fields shall you know me. Do you see the fields? The brethren that drove me down and the ones whom I talked to said, doesn't look very good on those fields. Wheat isn't prospering. Corn is drying up. Soybeans is dead. The farmers are in devastation. The president has to come down and declare it a disaster area. And Congress had to get together on a special session to earmark $5 billion for this tragedy. Fields shall yield no meat. Now, I'm interested. We're getting into Elijah here now. Few shall yield no meat. The flock shall be cut off from the fold. I won't tell you about that maybe later. And there shall be no herd in the stalls. This is a drought condition. The animals are affected. Now we get into Elijah. Do we have any time left? What's our time schedule? We'll try it. 1 Kings 17. And Elijah the Tishbite. That's all you know about him. No father, no mother. Who was of the inhabitants of Gilead, said unto Ahab, as the Lord of God Israel, before whom I stand, liveth, there shall be no dew or rain these years, but according to my word. Now, can you visualize that? Not months. Ours has only been going on about 3 or 4 months, and if it goes on another month, it's all over. This is 3 years. But the word of the Lord came unto him, saying, get thee hence, and turn thee eastward, and hide thyself by the brook Cherith that is before Jordan. See, the brother told you last night, but get into your chambers and shut your doors about you, because the judgment of the Lord is going to be initiated. And it shall be that thou shalt drink of the brook that I have commanded the ravens to feed thee there. So he went and did according to the word of the Lord, and went and dwelled by the brook Cherith, which is before Jordan. And the ravens brought him bread and flesh in the morning, and bread and flesh in the evening, and he drank at the brook. Well, what happened? It came to pass after a while that the brook dried up. Now you know what famine and drought can do. This is Elijah I'm talking about. Because there had been no rain in the land. That's what everybody... They prayed for it, beloved. This is the first time that I recall that states got together to pray. Minnesota. Who's the brother here from Minnesota? Where are you? Is he still here? Oh, he was. They had a mandate for a prayer by the churches. And other states had said the same thing. Some states had subpoenaed the Indians to do a war dance. So that's how bad it was. So the rain, there had been no rain in the land. Then the word of the Lord came to him, saying, get thee to Zarephath, and that belonged to Zidon, and dwell there. I have commanded a widow woman to sustain thee there. So as she was going, and when he came to the gate of the city, the widow came, and there was a gathering of sticks, and he called to her and said, fetch me a little water in a vessel that I may drink. When you can't get water, you're in the most dire trouble that you can be. Food is not so critical as water, lack of food. And she said, as the Lord thy God liveth, I have not a cake, but a handful of meal in a barrel, and a little oil in a cruse, and behold, I am gathering 2 sticks, that I may go in and dress it for me and my son, that we may eat it and die. Now you know what it's all about. That's what they went through. This is Elijah we're talking about. But this, then Elijah said unto her, fear not, go and do as I said. Make me a little cake first, bring it to me, and after make for thee and thy son. For thus saith the Lord of Israel, the barrel of meal shall not waste, neither shall the cruse of oil fail, until the day that the Lord sendeth rain. And it happened that way. And that day was quite a while off. All right, now then the next thing was the termination of the... edict. So Elijah came to pass, this is the 18th verse, it came to pass after many days that the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the 3rd year, saying, go show thyself unto Ahab, and I will send rain on the earth. Now this is just Elijah handling the situation. Ahab, Elijah went to show himself unto Ahab, and there was a sore famine in Samaria. And Ahab called Obadiah, which was the governor of the house, to find where Ahab was. Now it was so, for it was so when Jezebel, there's your Jezebel, cut off the prophets of the Lord, that Obadiah took 100 prophets and hid them by 50 in a cave and fed them bread and water. So this was not only for Elijah, but for the 50 prophets, and later on, no doubt, the 7,000 were involved. So this was a nationwide tragedy. Now, here's what I want to leave with you. And Ahab said unto Obadiah, go into the land, unto all fountains of water, and to the brooks. We went through Minnesota. The brother showed me the lakes with no water there. Dry bed. You got to know what that means. Farms are in bad shape. This was about a year or two ago. Today, I guess they were so because they're praying. It must be worse. So he said, go into the land unto all fountains of water and unto brooks. Peradventure, we may find grass to save the horses and the mules alive, that we lose not all the beasts. The thing that made an impact on me when I saw it the last time, it must have been worse this time, was chickens. Because everybody eats chickens. You had it for breakfast this morning. You had eggs. Those chickens can't stand the heat. Their body temperature can't take it. They're enclosed in an environment that's close and humid and hot, so they just die by the hundred thousands. Then your chicken's going to go up. And your eggs are going to go up. But the farmers are at a deficit. Now, this is what you've seen already. So this is what Ahab is addressing himself to. And as Obadiah was in the way, behold, Elijah met him. They finally met. And he knew him, Obadiah knew him, and he fell on his face and said, art thou my lord Elijah? Doing him obeisance. He said, yes, I am Elijah. Well, he says, go tell Ahab that I want to see him. He says, it shall come to pass, as soon as I am gone from thee, the Spirit of the Lord will carry thee whither I know not, and then my life will be in danger. So how can you say, go tell my Lord, behold, Elijah is here, and he shall slay me, because I won't be able to find you. Elijah said, as the Lord liveth, before whom I stand, I will surely show myself. All right, now the end result of this was, Elijah and Ahab met. The greatest victory on behalf of Israel in their historical dialogue or diary, in their diary of the historical events occurred at this particular confrontation. Because he told Ahab, I want you to gather all Israel together, because he was the king, he could do it. They did. And this was the great contest between Baal and the prophets of Baal, 400 of them, of Jezebel and Elijah. And that's where the victory was won. Because I'm not giving you the details in terms of fire came down and consumed the sacrifice and Elijah won the contest, but what we're saying is that Elijah came out victorious. Now, this great event is reflected in the 1260 days of Daniel, where the church goes through her 3.5 years of famine, drastic conditions, 42 months in Revelation, and a time times and a half a time in both Daniel and Revelation. Can't give you the citation, time to permit. But what we're emphasizing is the magnitude of this event has typical references in both Daniel and Revelation, the final book. This is where the church finds her past history identified. Now, the present history is that Elijah, the church, is the one whom the Lord is sending as his messenger to prepare the way for his kingdom sovereignty to be functioning. Known. The difference between preparing the way for the presence is what Brother Russell did under that movement. We're preparing for his appearing. The presence was to announce that he was on the scene. But it says, who shall abide the day of his presence? Because there would be test, because whose fan is in his hand, John the Baptist told us that, whose fan is in his hand, and he shall thoroughly purge his threshing floor. So there would be, used to expect the thunder and lightning to be reflected in the various confrontations, the controversies, the disaffections, the divisions, the siftings. All of this is part of his arrival at the temple, because some in certain areas where, as far as Christendom was concerned, he goes in with the whip, the lash, and drives the money changers out of the temple. That's his posture as far as Christendom is concerned. But with us, it has the refiner's fire and the fuller's soap. So now where the appearing comes in, it's how are you building? And so when the Malachi says that he shall send Elijah before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord, we are far along the line, because the appearance is going to, it is out of this great and dreadful day of the Lord that the Lord will manifest himself first to Israel. Behold, he cometh with clouds. That's weather problems. And every eye shall see him, and they also which pierced him. You're on the threshold of these events, because Elijah has done his work. Are we Elijah or aren't we? If we don't see these things, we question where we are. But that's the appearing. And, of course, with that goes John's famous text. We know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him. Do you feel any closeness there? For we shall see him as he is. So I'm leaving that note with you. That's why I say this is a great year. 88. So many things have happened. But it's a favorable juncture of time to make ourselves ready for the appearance, for the epiphania, for the gathering together unto him. But you've got to get together here. If we don't amend the various differences, controversies, splits, and so forth, it means that there'll be a very diminishing remnant that will be prepared to be gathered together. So it's up to you to determine how you relate to that situation. That's the reason I feel animated to speak as I do, that the Lord has revealed to us the closeness of the time and the momentousness of the events that are happening. So as he says in Thessalonians, let me read that for you to close with. It's a beautiful paean for the church. For the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of an archangel, and with the trump of God. The dead in Christ shall rise first. Then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds. That's what all this is about. Weather problems. Clouds and darkness around about him. A fiery stream goes before him. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne. That's the situation that we are in the midst of. But then, nevertheless, we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the midst of the clouds, in the air. There's more work to do up there when you get up there. Don't forget that. But it'll be good and victorious. So shall we ever be with the Lord. Wherefore, comfort one another with these words. May the Lord add his blessing. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. Just so that we don't interrupt or change the train of thought later on during the question period that you have, Brother Larry has given me some announcements to make. I'm going to make them right now.
Brother Levi, I'm Brother Harley Yerkes from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and the question I have to ask you is this. In the foreword to the fourth volume, Brother Russell says, and I quote, "The war shall not stop because of lack of men to be shot, but rather through financial weakness." And in his connection in the volume, in the chapter The Cries of the Reapers and associated chapters, he goes to show not only the plight of the farmers, but at least the implication of the outworking of that plight as far as the rest of Christendom is concerned. Is this one of the implications that you're making in your discourse?
Spell your implication out again.
Financial weakness, financial weakness, and eventual economic ruin of the country.
Correct.
That's exactly the point, that the base, actually, first of all, this is symbolical of all the plagues. There's 10 and there's 7. There's 10 on Egypt. There's 7 on Christendom. And then there's woes, even within the church. Because when the seventh angel sounded, there were great voices in heaven saying, the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and His Christ. That's the sovereignty has been transferred. That in itself was going to create some dissension among those who couldn't accept it. And then at the end of that chapter, it goes into the fact that the temple in heaven was open, the ark was seen in the temple, and then there was thunder and voices and an earthquake. So because of the trembling of the four corners of the earth as a result of the invasion of these plagues and disasters undermining the foundations of society. That's what it means, that the four corners of the earth would be affected. So I think exactly what he was saying is that these will eventually lead to it. It takes a little time. When we said about the financial disaster of the stock market bust, for lack of a better word, it didn't mean that the nation was going to crumble right away. But they're having trouble with it. The last time the stock, for the last week, the stock went down on an average of 20 points each day. It's down to the 2,115 or 2,031, I haven't heard the latest since I've been here, level. So it's crumbling. This is not telling you how many businesses are being affected, how much unemployment is being increased, and how the government's budget is going to be affected by these disaster allotments. So the end result would be the crumbling of the financial structure of society. The political would automatically be affected. The social system is already crumbling, and the religious system, forget it. Thank you.
Brother Levi, I appreciated your thoughts. You went into Matthew 24 for a little while, and you mentioned the beginning verses there. Do you apply those to the period we're living in now, or would you more aptly apply them to the events that took place up until the time of the end?
Give me the verse.
The verses, when you mentioned the wars and rumors of wars and, the famines and the earthquakes and the... But all these things are merely the beginning of the birth pains.
Mm-hmm.
How would you apply that in time sequence?
Very good. That's my point. The reason for referring to that was he tells you that this would be the scenario of events in the transition between the time that he's leaving and the time when he comes back. That's where that applies. But see, they have this system of our society has been under plagues and woes all the time. That's what you get in the seven seals. You have seven seals, you have seven trumpets, you have seven woes, you have three woes, and you have plagues. So the era between Jesus leaving, because right after that came this conflict between pagan and papal Rome, in which papacy dominated, and the earth was under the pressure of iniquity. So the woes that he says, there would, as a result, be wars, rumors of war. There would be all these famines and earthquakes and dire places, because they've had them all, but that's during this era in which he's absent. Now, the point I wanted to impress, that you transfer that, and you get the same formula for when he is present, because Elijah is on the scene. So that's the Elijah scenario, because it says, I will send my messenger, Elijah, before the great and dreadful day of the Lord. So Elijah is not applicable until the Lord has arrived in 1874, and then Elijah does his work, because his work is to prepare the way of acknowledging the presence as well as the reign. And then if it fails in turning enough hearts in the direction of conversion, which the Lord foresaw, the dreadful day of the Lord comes on a finality basis. So you transfer that context of wars, rumors of wars, nation against kingdom, famines, pestilence, and earthquakes into this era now as the end sign, not as something that's evolutionary.
Brother Levi, throughout his ministry...
Where's the voice coming from? I don't see it. Oh, I couldn't see him. Oh, from... Yes.
Throughout his ministry, Brother Russell called attention to the scriptural information that the nominal church systems will unite with the civil powers. He says the Bible points out, the scriptures clearly indicate the coming of a union of church and state, which will, for a brief time, rule the whole civilized world with a high hand. The nominal churches will, through the civil powers, with a high hand. It'll last only a brief time. And in reprint 1754, he refers to it as the sure-to-come union of church and civil government in reference to the John the Baptist type, what John the Baptist experienced at the hands of typical Herod and Herodias. My question is, and he said it was sure to come, do you expect in the future the union of the nominal churches with the governments and this brief ruling or trying to control humanity, ruling the whole civilized world with a high hand before the final overthrow of this present order? Do you anticipate such a union and such a high-handed exercise of power for a brief season?
No, I don't. That's pretty quick, isn't it? Doesn't mean that you don't have a right to believe what you want to believe, but it's not going to do any good for you if your major calling an election sure after you leave this convention. The friends, the churches, on a day-to-day basis, their test is to developing agape love, to bring fruit from the vine and more fruit. Husbandman is interested in fruit of the vine. He's not interested in your future speculation as to what's going to happen, because that's been on the books for 70 years. You know how many saints have gone home in that time? So it certainly wasn't relevant to their making their calling and election sure. So any speculation, I'm not saying that I'm going to disagree with it. I'll leave you open on that, but I say I don't anticipate it, because I don't expect to be here too much longer myself. So your test, beloved, is what you're doing today, how you're absorbing the blessings at this convention, what you're going to do when you go home. And you need to know that that's your responsibility as Elijah. Elijah himself, as a matter of fact, didn't have any problem. John the Baptist is only Elijah in terms of giving the message pertaining to Jesus present, not pertaining to Herod and his wife. Because Brother Russell also says that there were, in other places, some of the brethren have already verified this, that that could have been on the verge of a busybody. So he's not sure that John was thoroughly justified in that initiative, and therefore it's open. And in respect to the future, he says, I'm not sure about these things. I'm not a prophet on those matters. That's the way it looked to him from certain points of view. So that's not relevant to the church's spiritual destiny and the making of a calling election sure at the present time. That's my answer.